Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, May 13th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, and I've ordered beautiful blue skies for everybody, so they're here on time, and we love hearing from you, so I would love if everyone would call in live or to listen or just to ask questions. We have a fabulous guest today. So you can do so by dialing 347-857-2710. And we are here live until 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, please do so at just Lauren Leibowitz. That's L-A-U-R-E-N, Leibowitz, L-I-E-B-O-W-I-T-Z. And before I introduce my guest to you, there's a precaution. You may experience several bouts of laughter during this broadcast, and I just wanted to make everyone aware of that. So if that should occur, just keep laughing and enjoy yourself, and everything will be okay. Well, my guest today started as a campfire girl in the Bronx, I love that, and morphed into an Emmy Award-winning comedy writer and comedian. She was nominated for an American Comedy Award as one of the top five female comedians in the country and was recruited by Roseanne Barr to write for her sitcom, Roseanne. She's here to help us find the funny, so please welcome Monica Piper. Hi, Monica.
Hello, how are you?
I love the voice. Are you doing
I'm
the Lauren
McCall? I'm so sorry. I'm very deep today. I'm Ernest Borgnine doing B. Arthur today. That's how deep my voice is. But hi, everybody.
Not everybody can do Ernest Borgnine doing B. Arthur.
Walter Finley. Anyway, I think it's coming back. Hi, everybody.
I love it. No matter who you are today, we love having all of you.
Thank you.
All of you.
We thank you.
Yes, that same low price. I get all of you. I love that. So tell me about being a campfire girl. How did that help you become a comedian?
Well, you immediately begin to realize that life is strange when you're sitting on the subway with a bag of marshmallows and a twig saying, this can't be right, something's wrong. So I think from very early on I began to look at the world as a rather abnormal place and knew there was something funny about it, or at least I was funny within it, you know.
Did people in school tell you, Monica, you are so funny?
Well, I was always funny, but not comedy writer funny, just kind of silly funny. And my very first joke ever, and it was actually an inadvertent joke, was I was in high school, and we had this teacher, Mr. Cooper, who used to say to us, we're going to have a surprise pop quizzy. And one of those days he said, all right, today is a surprise pop quizzy. And I looked at the thing and I said, if these are your quizzies, I'd hate to see your testes. And I had honestly didn't realize what I had said. I thought I was just doing a funny play on words. And he sent me to the principal for being inappropriate. And she said, what exactly did you say? And I told her, and she cracked up. And my parents cracked up. I mean, they all thought it was pretty funny. And that was my very first joke. Everybody laughed, and it felt good. And I said, there's something to this. I think I'll be funny.
Yeah, I think I'll be funny. It's really that easy. And now.
And I actually became a teacher. I became a high school English teacher, but I had to leave teaching. I couldn't handle the money and prestige.
That's right. So true. So very true. But you know, it's very interesting. I joke writing. It's just such an interesting avenue. Obviously, or it sounds like it comes so easy to you. You know, the play on words. Is it?
Well,
I
don't really. That was probably my only pun type of joke. I really don't do puns, but I just came from a very funny family. I mean, my father, may he rest in peace, my father was the funniest man I ever knew. I mean, really funny. I remember in the months before my son's bar mitzvah, I said to my dad, "Dad, this is insane. Every time I turn around, it's $1,000. He said, "Don't turn around."
Exactly. So
I grew up with funny timing, and my mother was much drier. She had a dry wit. My whole family was funny. They were all crazy. My grandmother.
Were they from Europe? Do you think? Cause sometimes you often wonder, where does one get a sense of humor? Is it?
You know, I think my grandmother, telling me 42 times how she was almost raped and pillaged in her village. You know, I think you have to develop a sense of humor. And, of course, you know, being Jewish, there's just an automatic, you know, just a kind of an expression thing, a feeling of, I think it comes from necessity, having to find the funny, because the reality may be too grim, you know?
I think that's true for a lot of people. I remember meeting an uncle of my husband, and who was known to tell stories, you know, as jokes, that the old Jewish kind of joke telling.
Right.
So when he first met me, it was two Jews and a priest were going, and it wasn't even "Hello, nice to meet you." His whole conversation is through joke telling.
Right. Sometimes it's just through intonation. You know, I remember I used to work. I was doing a bunch of shows in Miami. And there was, remember Wolfie's Delicatessen in Miami? It's not there anymore, but it was such a funny place. And I wandered in there one day, and I found myself next to this old Jewish couple at the bakery counter. And she's up there going, "I'll have an onion roll. I'll have a rye bread seeded, no seeds, remember that, and thinly sliced." And then the husband said, "What about me?" She went, "You. I'll have a..." You know, it was just that, "You." And it was just the way she said it, the intonation, and you just grow up with those. I grew up in an apartment building with a vast array of really funny characters, not on purpose, but just funny characters. So I was able to really see the funniness in people, and whether they knew it or not, you know. And this came through in my writing, just calling back the quirks of these people and what made them so different, you know, and just funny.
So obviously,
sorry if you're not, are you all not laughing yet? But,
can you hear the roar? I'm roaring. But obviously, you do use your experiences of meeting certain people for.
I use all my experiences. My life is. You know, that's what you have to do. You have to take your experiences, and especially the ones that aren't good. You know, I was married at one time. We were young. Our values were confused. I don't like to dwell on it, but I happen to have the wedding announcement here with me. And I think if I share this with you,
That's a campfire girl. You come prepared.
Yeah. This might cast some insight as to what went wrong. Mr. and Mrs. Peter Barron Jr. wish to announce the wedding of their son, Peter Barron III, a tall, extremely handsome, athletic graduate of Harvard Law School, soon to open a private practice in Boston, to a tiny Jewish woman who smokes. Name furnished on request. Now, the truth here is that divorce is not fun. Divorce is painful. Divorce hurts. Divorce makes you angry. And the truth is, they were very waspy, and my family from New York, and they were from San Diego, and they were all very tall, and my family is all very short, and these were all realities, but I made it, you have to find the funny. Eventually, I was able to put it in perspective and say, what was funny about this, and the reality is, a tiny Jewish, this fabulous man married this tiny little Jewish woman. And so some of that, if you think about it, could be painful, but you just turn it around, you twist it, you exaggerate it, and that's what makes it funny.
Well, that's what, like you said, life presents itself, and all you do is the extension of the eyebrow, so to speak.
Exactly. You take what's real and you exaggerate it. I went through a breakup not too long ago. My life sounds like some kind of terrible Victorian
tragedy.
Well,
you need to find the funny, Monica.
Well, I'm finding the funny. And I'm, I'm one of those people who wallows. I don't just brush things off. And it kills me, too, this breakup, because I really think it could have worked if only he'd been an entirely different person.
Exactly.
But, it's true. Everything becomes very melodramatic. The phone rings. Hello? Oh, it's you. What are you calling me for? We said everything there was to say last time you called. Leave me alone. I've told you 1,000 times. I already get DirecTV. take it further.
That's right. It just sounds so easy for you to just throw these lovely little quips out. Can you, and I know there are people listening who are comedy writers or future comedy writers, what kind of steps do you go through to construct a joke?
Well, first, you get the idea. If you really are serious about being a comedian or a comedy writer, you always walk around with a little tape recorder. And you should have a notebook right by your bedside so that first thing in the morning you can write down. I find that when you're first waking up, you're somehow, I am at my most creative when I'm first waking up. Ideas just kind of pour out. And you write them down. If something strikes you funny at all, even though it's certainly not a full, well-rounded joke by any means at that point. But if something strikes you funny, you write it down. And then you get to work, and you really start to write it. And then once you start writing all the elements that you want to include in that joke, then you start listening to the rhythm. I was at a venue recently, and there were a lot of very funny comedians doing material, but a lot of them were beginners. And you could tell that they didn't put any time into actually crafting the joke. To me, comedy is jazz. It really is. It's sounds. It's rhythm. I do a joke about my son when he was a baby, what an adjustment it was having a new baby in the house. I said it was like suddenly living with a little king. My diaper is soiled, wench, clean me. Offer your freshly laundered sleeve. I wish to spew some cheesy substance. But the word clean me, that's that comedy K sound. You've got to try to find that. You've got to try to find the rhythm of the joke. Too many syllables will ruin the joke. The wrong word will ruin the joke. It's really delicate, and it's so much fun when you get it and it works.
I watched your videos, and I realized that not only in the writing and the crafting of the joke, but it's also about the delivery. The timing is also rhythmic.
Timing is everything, and the rhythm of it is everything. One of the comics the other night had some funny material, but she kept saying, it was like this, and, if you wrote the joke, really wrote it, and then let it come out with the rhythms that it needs, you wouldn't have, you know, in the middle of it. You know, I know it's, I sound kind of teacher-like when I say all this, but it's true. It's a craft, and really good comedians respect that craft, and they respect when other comedians are really good at that craft, because it really is about writing. And then the delivery, of course, is again, it's the rhythm, but it's also how funny you are at characters. Like, if there's a funny character that you run into, I mean, I used to have this neighbor, this is the truth, and when I lived in my old house, I had this neighbor, this old, weathered, funny, middle-aged woman from Texas, and she was possibly the most passive-aggressive person I had ever known. She'd say things like, when my son was a baby, she'd go, "Oh, look at the little baby outside without a hat." You know, I mean, she'd just get that zinger in at the last minute. So I use her in my act, but I totally exaggerate what it is she says. You know, I do a thing about coming home. How many times have you come home, dragged yourself out of work? "I can't believe I have to make dinner. Why do they have to eat? I hate
right.
I hate that they eat." And now pups Pauline, my neighbor, "Dinner doesn't have to be a problem." "It doesn't? No, all you need is a good crock pot." "Really? Dinner just about cooks itself." "It does. You just need to know a few little tricks. At 5 a.m. you cut your carrots." I have no idea what she said after that, but I vaguely remember thinking, wow, that could be the fastest I ever hated anyone.
I know. I always think there's material and stories right in front of us if we only opened our eyes and took a peek.
Well, it's all there. It's all right there. It's just a kind of a twisted look at what's in front of you, and finding whatever that germ is that's funny about that person, and then turning it on its ass. Am I allowed to say ass?
I think you said ass. Here come the straitjackets. Put your hands up.
You know, like your dog. Anyone who has a dog. Dogs, to me, are the funniest people that you can run into. I mean, they're dogs. I imagine with my dog, I always imagine what he's thinking and how he would talk if he could talk. You know, and I just love becoming his voice. It's the favorite part of my act right now. I just love doing my dog.
What is your dog's name?
Ziggy.
Ziggy.
And, you know, I do a thing about going through this breakup, and that's the time you get close to your dog again. "Come on, boy. Come on, Ziggy. You want to come up on the bed? Come on up on the bed." "Oh, now I can come up on the bed." "What, the guy with the allergies take a hike?" Yeah.
Exactly.
And I talk about the two of us being under the covers, eating ice cream, wallowing together, listening to the saddest of music. My dog thinking, "Where'd she get this music? The Sylvia Plath Record Club?"
Yeah.
Which two people got the other night. But,
but you know,
it's fun.
It is fun. But do you think as a female comic that there's a glass ceiling for women?
Well,
in your line of work?
I don't know if there is anymore, because there's a lot of them. And great comedians, obviously, like Joan Rivers and Phyllis Diller. And then great comedian like Elaine Boozler, you know, I think they helped change that. But it was hard initially getting booked as readily as the men would get booked, you know. But now I think it's definitely much better. I think more of the jeopardy of being a female comedian, especially if you're single, is that it's a little intimidating to men, you know. No matter
a woman who is funny is sexy. Because that means she's smart.
Well, I, you know, certain men that I have known.
Can we say sexy on the air?
What?
I said, can we say sexy on the air?
Sexy.
Sexy.
There, I said it. I just think that a lot of men find it unfeminine, you know?
Well,
but I used to have a ball with it. I used to just literally pick up men from the stage. I mean, I'd see a cute man in the audience, and I would just start talking to him. And then,
but, I think your style might change depending on the venue, but what I so appreciate about watching your videos is that, I don't mind blue humor, but when every other word is blue, that's not funny. And I think
venue the other night, there was someone who was doing a woman who was doing a lot of really blue stuff. And if you can pull it off, if it's blue but hilarious, you know, I mean, if it's blue but within that blueness there's really great jokes, then maybe you can get away with it. But just to be blue, just to get a laugh, you know, a cheap laugh, it's not, the audience doesn't appreciate it as much as a really smart, funny joke.
One joke where, you used the term passing gas, and it was at that moment that I thought, that is so funny. Those
passing
words
wind,
together.
I think it was the advantages of being a woman. A woman can be in an elevator full of men, pass wind, and no one will think it's her.
and if
we did
visual.
That sort of thing, but it's biologically impossible.
Exactly. I was howling. I said, that is so funny because it's so true, but just the use of certain words are funny.
Well, in my act, I use the F word. I can't say it, right?
Go ahead. I dare you.
But can I?
Yeah.
Because am I allowed to?
Yeah, I don't think the FCC is on board at the moment.
Good. But I don't do it as, you know, I don't say, so this fucking guy did this and did that. It's a carefully crafted joke. The joke is, my neighbor just got a new dog. Apparently his name is Get Off the Fucking Couch. Which I think lacks imagination because that's her husband's name, too.
That's it.
So that's the way I use that, you know, if I'm going to use it, it's not just going to be part of my conversation because I just let it fall out, you know. It's part of a crafted joke. I think I'll say crafted 99 more times.
That's the magic
people.
Word for the day. If I had known we were going to use it, I would have offered it as, you know, like the magic word, and we would have offered some parting gift.
Well, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I want a parting gift.
You want a parting gift? All right, then go already. Go already. Tell me, what was your experience being the writer for Roseanne and some of the other, you were writing for Mad About You. How was
Well, Roseanne, that was my first writing job, and for me it was the most unusual mixture of wonderful and terrible because I had a baby at home, and I didn't go out seeking a writing job. I was actually on the road with my kid. He was a baby, and I was taking him with me on the road everywhere, performing. You know, I'd have him in my arms, and they go, now Monica Piper, and I'd turn to the bouncer and say, hold this. You know, he'd hold my baby, and I'd go do my thing. So I really wasn't looking, but I was called and literally recruited to write for the show, and I couldn't turn it down. It was the number one show on the air, and it was a great entree into the writing, you know, the whole sitcom writing scene, which I really wanted because I knew I had to get off the road eventually. But it was tough because we had a showrunner who really believed that you could squeeze juice out of a writer until 4 a.m., and it was unbelievable. Because I was the only one that had a baby at home. So, you know, I had a nanny, and I had her bring him out to me every day so I could have lunch with him and hang with him during some off time. But, you know, it was tough. I was extremely sleep deprived during that time. But on the other hand, it was fantastic because I was around such funny, brilliant writers. And of course, you know, when you're in Roseanne world, it's insane. That's when she was with Tom.
Mm, right.
And it was an unbelievable experience
now,
watching her.
But now, because of having your son, is that what made you decide to do more corporate humor?
No, that's what made me turn to. I mean, from Roseanne, after Roseanne, I just really needed to be with my kid. So that's when I went back on the road with him and really, really had a great time watching him grow and explode with language, and it was fabulous. But then it came time for him to go to school, to a preschool, so that's when I knew I needed to be more grounded and get off the road. So I turned to animation. And I wrote, my first animated thing was on a show called Duckman. I don't know if a lot of people saw that show, but it was a cult favorite. It was hilarious. It was with Jason Alexander. It was an adult. It wasn't a kid's comedy at all. It was funny and dirty and irreverent, and it was on the USA Network, and it was really funny. But they were run by Klasky Csupo, the company that did Rugrats and The Wild Thornberries and the really popular kid shows for Nickelodeon. So eventually I got into that wheelhouse, and then I became the head writer of Rugrats, which was perfect because when I was doing Mad About You and Veronica's Closet and my kid wanted my attention, he was getting older, if I had a script due, I'd have to say, "Oh, honey, I'm sorry. You know how it is when I have a script due. Just let me finish this. Let me finish, you know, give me an hour, and then we'll play," and blah, blah, blah. But with Rugrats, it was amazingly wonderful because I could say to him, "Jakey, come here. I need a joke for Chucky."
Nice. You pimped out your son.
I pimped him out. As a matter of fact, this is so cool. I said to him once, "Got any ideas for, you know, for Rugrats stories?" And he said, "Yeah, I think there's a great idea. How about Grandpa takes the kids and he falls asleep and they float down a lily pad and they bring home a frog for Dill?" So I knew I couldn't do that because you really can't have kids floating down rivers with their supervisor sound asleep because they, you know, they get on you about all that stuff. But I said, "You know, there's something there, giving Dill a present. There's something there. Why would Tommy want to give Dill a present?" And then we figured out that it's because he was jealous, because Spike, their dog, was giving Dill all this attention. So he wanted to bring Dill, his own pet, so that he could have his dog back. Anyway, we came up with this idea. I pitched it to the room. The room loved it. That germ became a premise. The premise became an outline. The outline became a script. And the show was produced. It was called Share and Share a Spike. And I gave my son a credit. It said, "Based on an idea by Jake Piper, written by Monica Piper."
That's beautiful.
Yeah, and then on his 7th birthday, I had it framed, you know, that intro, those credits. And he found it on his wall when he woke up.
That's a beautiful gift.
He got obnoxious. Like, he'd call his friends and say, "I can't really talk to you. My episode's on tonight." You know, it's like, okay.
Well, you know, I'm going to have you back on the air because we've only got 30 seconds left. I don't
really?
Know.
Really?
Yes, there is, because you're a talented lady and you've got more funny in you, and we didn't even get to talk about your corporate funny and a whole bunch of stuff.
And we didn't teach people how they can find the funny.
Exactly. So you must come back, please. I hope you'll find some time to come back and share all that stuff with everybody. But I just wanted to give out your contact information. The phone number for Monica Piper is 310-396-1173, or you can email Monica at monica at monica MonicaPiper.com. That's
or go to my website.
Or go to her website at MonicaPiper.com. And please say you'll come back. Please.
I would love
please.
To come back. I have so much more to say.
Beautiful.
Hopefully my voice will be back by then.
And all of them. So come back again, Monica. Thank you so much for joining me today. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.